Studio 360.
Nadja Spiegelman grew up seeing stories about her family and her forebears depicted in books. That's because her father is Art Spiegelman, who won the Pulitzer Prize for his great graphic novel, Mouse, which was unearthed from his own father's experiences as a Holocaust survivor in Poland. Now, Nadja Spiegelman is the one using her family's story as material. Her new memoir, called I'm Supposed to Protect You from All This, tells not just her story and her mother's story, but that of her grandmother and great-grandmother, four generations of women. Her mother is Françoise Mouly. She's French, and for years she has been the art director of The New Yorker.
It began about my mother, because I think like mothers are the primal and primary beginning of all things and all stories. And then when I learned about my mother, it became about her mother and then her mother's mother and then her mother's mother's mother and this sort of Russian nesting doll, endless regression of within every mother there is a daughter.
Yes. And all these very difficult French women back to the beginning of the century.
Yes.
And before. I know both your parents slightly. I worked at The New Yorker for a few years, and so I was able to view mostly your mother at an intimidating distance.
Same distance I viewed her from.
Well, of course, I wasn't her child or her boss. But what you write of her conforms with my impression of her, which is to say my impression of her in that office was she scared her bosses. She was daunting and powerful both in her Frenchness and force of nature quality. And clearly she was not so different at home.
Well, I mean, one of my favorite stories about my mother is that when they moved the New Yorker offices, she saw the floor plan and saw that she had an open office. And so she went in on a Sunday, just walking past the security guards and built walls for her office because she'd been to architecture school and knew how. So in her high heels, she brought what she needed and
That's
she built herself
in.
Walls. That's leaning in.
She was also rough on you in many ways, it seems to me. And it also strikes me as, among other things, a kind of case study of the stereotype of the fraught relationships that mothers and daughters have, where the father just gets to be this beloved, like, character off in the distance. Like, that is the stereotype, and that's sort of your life, wasn't it?
That's my life as it's portrayed here, because I didn't want to write an objective biography. And if I had, I would have included as many people's perspectives as possible.
Right.
I could have talked more about my father. I could have talked to my aunts who had very different memories of their own childhoods.
Right.
And instead, I kept this very pared
focused
down to my relationship with my mother, my mother's relationship with her mother, her mother's relationship with hers.
Right.
I have plenty that I could have said about my relationship with my father. It just didn't feel like this was the place to do it.
Right.
And I don't plan on writing
That's in volume three of your memoir.
My dad keeps joking about the daddy dearest that's coming, but I promised him I'm not planning it.
Yeah. Your grandmother, José, is more than anyone else in this book, like a fictional character. I mean, it's hard to imagine that this person exists as you have portrayed her. I'm not doubting you, but she is this sort of extreme French woman with blue eyeliner tattooed onto her eyes and many lovers over the years, and lives on this houseboat in the Seine that has a jacuzzi.
She is like that. And it was amazing. I mean, she was made to be a character in a story. And she's so witty. She has like these amazingly cutting.
She's mean.
She's mean, but in a way that's so smart and impressive. And she's larger than life in so many ways, which is why it was fascinating to me to discover her experience of her childhood, where she had once felt lost, confused, and not powerful. But also very difficult to write about her because she's been living her life entirely. She very much is a self-constructed human who created
her
own.
She's been alone for a long time.
She's created her own creation myth. She wanted to be in a certain social circle in France that precluded acknowledging her own past. And so she recreated herself as somebody who could fit into this world. And continues to recreate herself all the time. I think it's not easy for her to have anybody else set her down on paper.
Yeah. You worked on this a long time. Basically, I mean, you're 29?
Yeah.
So most of your 20s, you've been writing this book.
Yeah, I started when I was 21.
What you were writing when you were 27 and 28, did that, as you finished this manuscript, seem very different than what you'd written at 21, 22?
Yeah, I think so. In part because especially when I was that young, if people asked me what I was working on and I used the word memoir, there was only ridicule. And
really?
I was very careful.
The eyes were rolled.
And I was very careful, therefore, I did not want it to be about myself. And in the beginning, the project was very much just about my mother and my grandmother. And there were no parts of it about my own adolescence. And it was only when I got to the end of the project that I realized that if I was demanding this intimacy from my mother and grandmother, I owed it to show those parts of my own life as well. And so those parts, actually, I think I only could have written at the later part of my 20s.
Well, once you had more than a decade of distance from the horrible years that adolescence is.
Yeah, because it seems so, so vivid when you're in it.
Yes. And again, this wasn't just, I have a lot of memories from childhood and I talked to my grandma and here, I've written it down. You treated this like a formal journalistic project. You interviewed and recorded the interviews with both your mother and your grandmother.
Yeah. Well, in some ways it was a formal journalistic project. And in some ways it was because I do have over 100 hours of interviews recorded with them that I transcribed. But on the other hand.
Really? You transcribed them all?
Yeah. And I transcribed them in English, even though the interviews were in French.
But you don't speak. Growing up, did you speak to your mother who grew up herself in France, but then moved to New York as a teenager? Did you speak to her in French growing up routinely?
Yeah. I only spoke to her in French growing up from the time I learned to speak.
And when both your parents were in the room, like...
It drove my father crazy.
I bet.
He would pretend that he couldn't speak French. But as soon as we told secrets, he understood them. So he could speak enough of it.
Really? So you really absorbed the material by both hearing it and then translating it as you transcribed it.
Yeah, which made it languageless in a way. And then it was journalistic, but at the same time, what I was really interested in was the space between fiction and nonfiction and the idea that when it comes to our own memories and to family memories, there's not one truth. There's not one objective past. And so it was both journalistic, but also a real exploration of how constructed these narratives of ourselves are.
And you have demonstrated that in spades. For instance, I'm thinking of a story that I want to briefly summarize. Your mother tells you a story about how when she's on vacation with her parents, 13, in the French Alps, and she bakes a lemon pie, not knowing how to bake, and her parents think it's terrible. Her father gets a chainsaw to try to cut it. She is humiliated. Then, as you're writing the book, you have your mother and your grandmother together, and you ask your mom to retell that story. We have the tape, your tape of that interview, which is in French. So tell us what they're saying.
Oh, maman, j'avais une question. Est-ce que tu peux...
This is me telling my mother to retell the story. So you can hear that my voice goes up an octave when I'm talking to my family. My grandmother starts adding details to my mother's story, such as she was the ski champion. And then she tells the story, and my grandmother says, "And?" And my mom says, "What?" And my grandmother says, "And is that all?" And my mother says, "Well, no, I mean, you made fun of me for a really long time." And my grandmother's like, "You don't remember the avalanche?" And my mother's like, "Then?" And my grandmother's like, "Yes." Eventually, my mother says, like, "Okay, yeah, I guess I remember the avalanche. I hadn't remembered that it was the same day, but I guess I do remember that avalanche. All I remember is the humiliation of the moment." And my grandmother says, "But exactly, that's what's so hilarious for you. It's just your lemon pie, but the window broke."
No, it's a key story because it's both... You know, it's everything you're trying to do here. I mean, summing up these two women and their arguments, but this nature of reality. An avalanche came into the house and broke windows, but all your mother can remember is they didn't like my pie.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's true that we all live through the same thing. Somewhere there's some kind of real reality, but yeah, we take away such different moments that it is almost as if we'd lived different pasts.
No, and when one talks to one's siblings and everybody has a different memory, slightly different memory of this event or that event, I've never heard one where you forget the avalanche or any analogous thing.
Yes.
So at the center of the book, obviously, are all these women, including yourself, with very different memories. And it's not clear to you, it seems as though you're scrupulous about not necessarily, when you don't know the answer, saying, oh, she's wrong, she's right, this is correct, this is not correct. Does it matter to you?
No. There was a moment when my mom had diaries that she was reading to me from she was telling me a story and then she had in front of her diaries she'd kept during those years. And she looked in the diary and she was like, oh, well, this contradicts my narrative, but you know what? It's not important. What's more important is how I remember it. And she put the diaries aside and kept telling me the story the way she remembered it. And actually, that's what was most interesting to me, was these ways in which we construct ourselves and construct each other, the way the past is like this incredibly malleable thing that is always being changed in order to lead up to the present moment.
I have to confess, one of my takeaways from this lovely book is as a portrait of three women who were very difficult and occasionally cruel mothers. Do you feel as though there's some, I don't know, hereditary tradition of that you were born into?
No, I don't. There was a book on my father's shelf called, my parents' shelf. I never read it, but the book was called All Our Secrets Are the Same. And I think, honestly, like, when you ask any adolescent girl about her mother, you're going to get a story of cruelty, of anger, of hurt. And there are definitely extremes within that. But I think that what I came away from this with was an understanding that each of these women was doing their best without any kind of blueprint for how to become a mother. And that there was actually something really beautiful about how well they had succeeded.
Yeah. And were you... So you ended up – this you're not just putting on a show of, I'm not bitter, and they were fine.
No, really not. In fact, it was actually – this was an incredibly useful book to write just because it – I think that I began it thinking, how can I forgive my mother?
Right.
And then I ended it thinking, like, that is really the wrong question.
Right. Your father, as we've said, is Art Spiegelman, who's best known for Mouse, great – graphic memoir. He's a great figure in American culture who has spent a lot of time in that book, certainly, focusing on his family. Did that make it easier to sort of go into the family business and do the same, do not the same thing, but a version of that?
I think it made it seem possible in a way that probably to many other people, this kind of exploration of one's family in public would seem so automatically taboo. And for me, because I'd always grown up with grandparents who were a book, with versions of myself who existed within books, with versions of my father who existed within books, this parallel lives that people can have as both people and characters in other people's stories was something that I was constantly aware of.
Well, so, yes, in your particular life, the lines between fiction and nonfiction were already blurry.
Yes.
So, how about the principles? Who's read it? Has your mother read this book?
Yes.
And how's she with it?
She learned a lot about my grandmother through the book and was really happy to have learned that. She needs to think of it as being about someone else for it to be something that she can handle.
Right.
So she thinks of it as being about some other girl.
And your grandmother, has she read it?
She has. And that hasn't been easy either. As I was saying earlier, she's such a self-created person that I think it's really difficult for her to see herself through anybody else's eyes. But the structure of this project gave me a format in which to have this accelerated intimacy with her, where I got to ask her so many questions, and I'm really grateful for that.
And I can, again, I don't know her, but I feel like I know her a little bit now. She seems like somebody who would be happy to be immortalized in a well-received book.
I hope so. I think that she thought She thought I was going to be her ghostwriter, and if she'd been my editor, the book would have been much shorter. I don't think that she thought I think she's uncomfortable with the moments where she's being seen through my eyes.
Right.
As is my mother, as I think anybody would.
Well, congratulations. It's a great piece of work, and you should be very proud.
Thank you.
Nadja Spiegelman's book, I'm Supposed to Protect You from All This, is out now.